Well, this is Robert Kiyosaki. We're continuing on with the tape set for Cashflow 101. And now we're going to go into, I think, is a very important subject for anybody's life. And that subject is, how do you invest? Or more specifically, how do you have your money work hard for you with as little risk as possible with the highest returns? So, Sarah, this is where I'd like to ask you to come in, because Diane and I invest all the time. Maybe you should reintroduce yourself, give you a little bit of your background and some of your questions you have relative to the subject of investing.
The subject of investing has always been so foreign to me, but I was put in a situation being a single mom, having to look at how I can support myself and my son.
But also you're self-employed, so you don't have job security per se.
I always knew that I could make money. I always knew I could always cover my nut. Because of my child, I knew I always had to do that. But I never really understood how I could give him security in the future. If I'm not there, what can I give him and what can I teach him? Because I can always write a check somewhere, but I can't teach or have him understand that things are always in motion. But when I'm single, divorced, financially responsible, I am inundated with a perception that I can't do it all. And I needed to get over the fear of how everybody else can do it. Why can't I? I needed to be prepared. But when you talk about investing, it's such a foreign thing to me. Nobody taught me investing. They taught me to save, but they never taught me how to make the machine work for me.
If I could start with that, one of the reasons investing is such a strange subject to most people is because it's a huge subject. If you take a moment and think about just your house, you think of all the appliances in it. Those appliances are there because somebody built a company to deliver those appliances, but somebody also invested in that company hoping that you would buy those products so the investor would get some kind of return. When you think about the electricity is delivered to you by a utility company that investors invested in hoping to get a return by delivering you that service. When you look at your car, the engine, the spark plugs, the windshield wipers, the seats, you know, they're all different companies coming together, and somebody invested in those companies so that you could have a car. The same as the road, even the striping on the road, those are all investor things. When you look at the subject of investing, it's such a huge subject that I made a short list just in the subject of stocks. These are the different kinds of stocks you can invest in. There's common stock, preferred stock, stock with warrants, small cap stocks, blue chip stocks, convertible stock, technical stocks, industrial stocks, etc., etc., etc. In bonds, there's treasury bonds, there's muni bonds. In real estate, there's single family investments, commercial office, commercial retail, multifamily, warehouse, industrial, raw land to the curb, etc., etc., etc. In mutual funds, there's index funds, aggressive growth funds, sector funds, income funds, closed-end funds, balance fund, muni bond funds, etc., and it just goes on and on and on. So those are all the different products you can invest in. So you have product, and then you have procedures or techniques. How do you buy them? So there's people who buy, hold, and pray. In other words, you buy a stock, you hold on to it, and you pray it goes up in value. That's the very common strategy. That applies to real estate, stocks, bonds, anything. That's a strategy or a procedure. Then there's buy and sell. Those are traders. A trader buys something they never intend to use because they plan to sell it immediately. Then they have the sell and the buy, which means they sell something, they buy it back. That's a short trader. It's a whole completely different strategy. You have option buying and selling. Then you have dollar cost averaging. Then you have brokerings. And many people consider themselves investors. They're really just brokers. They're doing a deal back and forth. And then there's savers. And a saver could be the cash, stock, bond, mutual fund, or collectibles. There's precious metals, there's commodities and all this. So the subject of investing is so big, so huge. And there's so many different ways to do it. On top of that, you watch the news and one guy will come on and say, the market is going to go up. 10 minutes later, another guy comes on, the market's going to go down. You sit there going, well, which one is it? Then you had somebody says, you should buy gold today. 2 minutes later, don't buy gold. Or somebody says, this stock is going to go up. Another 10 minutes later, somebody else will come down and say, this stock is going to go down. And you sit there in paralysis. Well, the worst thing that happens to me when in investing is I'll go to a party. Somebody says, man, I just bought XYZ at $2, went to 35, split, went to 70. I sold out, I made a killing. That makes me nauseous. So why are you telling me about this? Make me feel bad? You know, and there's other people who say, well, then I bought it at 10, it went to 5 immediately, so I sold, went back to 10. Well, what happened to me? Where somebody else says, well, this is the number one mutual fund of the year. So the moment you buy it, it becomes number 10 of the year. And all of this confusion and all these people on television and the newspapers and all these guys giving you advice, that's why investing is such a goofy subject, because it permeates entire life around you. It's everywhere around you, and everybody's opinion has some validity, and the other part is completely garbage. So the thing that I say to people is, number one, investing is not a product or a procedure. In other words, people say, well, you in stocks, you in bonds, you mutual funds, you trade them, do you do this, do you do that? They get focused on the product or the procedure. That's not investing. Investing is simply a plan, and the plan involves different products and different procedures to get Sarah what she wants. So the way my rich dad said to me, just think as a vehicle. In other words, you want to go from here to Hawaii, obviously got two choices. Cars won't work. Either boat or plane will get you there. And you choose your vehicle. How fast you want to get there, but I want to get there in 5 hours. And you got to fly. 5 days, boat. And so what people get stuck in, again, I'll say it again, is they get stuck in the products or the procedures and not the plan. So very simply, what investing is you start with where you are today. Do a financial. This is where I am today. Now, in 10 years, or when your child's ready to go to college, this is what I need by then. You fill out a financial for the future or a goal. And then you figure out which products and which procedures will fulfill what you want.
I was just also going to add, additionally, look at where your values are. What is it that's most important to you? We talk about whether security, comfort, or being rich. Each one of those modes have different ideas that go along with those, and obviously different plans that would happen too. So a lot of investing starts before you even pick up the Wall Street Journal or call anyone on the phone. It has to do with examining where you are,
right,
emotionally and financially, and where you want to go.
What's important to you?
Well, what's important to you is when you look at your family. I don't have a whole lot of money to put out to do a big deal, but I can do a little thing, one step at a time. That's part of the plan and part of the idea of investing.
That is investing, though. What I'm trying to say to you is what people are talking about really isn't investing. That's the worst part about it. Somebody says, I'm doing electronic day trading. They're not doing electronic day investing. They're doing trading. When somebody says, I'm speculating on the stock, they're not investing. They're speculating.
They're gambling.
And that's what confuses people. Investing is none of that stuff you see on television, the high flyers or the movie Wall Street or Gordon Gekko. That is not it. That's the game they play around the subject. Investing is fairly simply, you're buying a vehicle to get you from point A to point B. And it may mean a series of different types of vehicles to get you what you want. So in one situation, you may use a mutual fund. A mutual fund has different strengths and different weaknesses. What you first start with is where you are and where you want to go. And you start with a plan.
And it might take me longer because I have other things coming into my life.
Exactly.
But as long as I keep my focus, I know that I can go forward.
For instance, you being at the age you are, the profession you are, and you're earning a certain income level is different than Kim and I, who have no kids right now, and at different ages also. So a person who's 20 years old with 3 kids is different than somebody 50-year-old with no kids. 20-year-old making $20,000 a year and a 50-year-old making $100,000 a year. Different plans, different goals, different desires.
Well, that's why a lot of people get so disillusioned about the idea, because they think, I can't do it. These people can do it because they already have money.
And that's completely bogus. So what I'm trying to say to people is that's not investing. It is drama. It is Hollywood. It is what makes good news. Investing, for the most part, is boring, mundane, pedestrian. It is not what people think it is.
It's repeating?
Yeah, but first you start with a roadmap of where you want to go and how you're going to get there. That's all a plan is. I want to go from L.A. to Paris. Well, you can walk to New York and catch a boat. You can fly to New York and then catch a boat, or you can swim. You can do anything you like. But how you want to get there? And that's all it is. And the stuff that they're talking about makes me nauseous personally. So there's certain times I use a mutual fund. Sometimes I use real estate. Sometimes I use a corporation. Sometimes I don't use a corporation. Sometimes I use an accountant. Sometimes I use an attorney and all this. But that's what it is. It's really quite boring. It's also not risky.
And investing begins in your head with the plan. For me, it becomes real simple then. Once I know what my plan is or my client's plan is, we've got 3 questions that we do. And I know Robert's the one who shared these questions originally with me. First, look at the investment. 1, does it fit my current plan?
Is it a stock? Is it a bond? Is it a piece of real estate? Is it part of my plan? And then how am I going to acquire it with the procedure?
And then if it does, how is it going to affect my financial statement? The skills that you've picked up from playing the game. Where is it going to go on my balance sheet and my income statement? How is this going to affect? And then 3rd, if this looks favorable because of the first 2 questions, how can I afford it? It filters out all of that news, all of those hot stock tips that you hear, these great real estate deals. They might be great for someone else, but maybe they're not right for you or for me.
I think Diane said it most is what most people are. They're so banged up financially that they think if they make more money, that'll solve their money problems. Well, money doesn't solve your money problems. It sometimes makes it worse. That's how we started this whole thing off with. So unfortunately, most people think that what investing is that high flyer, the big bucks, the lottery type mentality. And that's really not what it is. It is a very simple thing. Before you invest, talk to a financial planner. Interview several of them. There's financial planners for the rich, the poor, and the middle class. If you go to a doctor and you have a throat problem, you don't go to a podiatrist. And that's what people are doing. They don't have a plan. They're trying to buy and sell things with not knowing where they're going. My plan was very simple. There's three basic different types of asset classes. There's businesses, there's real estate, and there's paper assets. Paper assets like stocks and bonds. I'm very strong in businesses. I know how to start a business, let them run. And then the business then buys my real estate. The real estate puts a lot of money in my pocket, but also I get passive losses against it. I don't get that with mutual funds. But mutual funds, I have another reason for buying them. I've started with a plan. I'm ending with a plan. The reason I was financially free by 47 was I was a plan. I just wrote it out. This is what I'm going to do. This is how I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do anything outside of that. So somebody came along to me and said, hey, I got this hot stock tip. It's not part of my plan. Don't get me off track here. I'm on my plan. So yeah, but you can get rich quick. I said, that's not part of my plan. My plan is not to make more money. See, my plan was to buy an asset, i.e. an apartment building, or to buy so many shares of a stock that paid so much in dividends. That was my plan. It wasn't about making money. That's the biggest difference of all. The real purpose of investing is to take earned income and convert it either to passive income, which is income from a piece of real estate or royalty, or to buy a stock and get a dividend from it or capital gains from it. So the most important thing is to know what the heck you're doing, where you're going, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, what your dreams are. For instance, having a boy, you always want to set money aside for college, right? That becomes part of a plan. I don't have that as part of my plan. So everybody is different. Everybody has different strengths and different weaknesses. And that's really what investing is. It's not about this high-flying stuff.
But it's also the point of being flexible and knowing what's good for you and knowing what's good for that situation. That's why I think that game is important, because the game teaches you that there are other routes.
But the game is really about that financial statement. This is the point I want to make with investing. There's a saying that goes, if you find yourself digging a hole, the first thing you do is stop digging. So the purpose of the game is to teach you how a financial statement really works. Your first step then is to take one of those game sheets, the financial statement sheets, and do your best to fill out an actual. Don't do this until after you've really understood the game, what the game teaches you. Then fill out an actual of where you are today. And you can start to do your own fundamental analysis or financial analysis of your strengths, your weaknesses, what you want, where you're going. Then you take another sheet of paper and say, in 10 years, this is what I want my financial to look like. So you do today, and then you do one for X number of years in the future, 5 years, 10 years, 65, 105, whatever it is. With me, my goal was to be retired by age 45. So I had a starting financial, which was in terrible condition. If you read Cash Flow Quadrant, my wife and I were financially broke, we're homeless. But in less than 10 years, we're financially free. We started with nothing, but we knew exactly what our financials were to look like. And it was cash flow from businesses and from real estate and a little bit from mutual funds and financial plan. But that was our plan. And we just worked the plan. 10 years, we're financially free. Now, do I recommend that to you? No. Do I recommend it to anybody else? No. But it starts with me. Diane Kennedy and I have a tape, what's called?
First Step to Financial Freedom.
Reason for that tape set is for you to sit down and actually figure out where you are and what your strengths, what your weaknesses are, where you want to go. And it's to stop digging that hole right now and get on the path you want to go to. Anything you want to say about that set?
Basically, it came as a result of the people that would call and say, I've played cash flow, what do I do next? And so this answers the question of what is the next step, which is exactly what we're talking about, designing the plan you need to have, and then the foundational steps you can take along that plan with some ideas.
And why that's important is you first fill out your own financial statement so you really understand it for yourself. Now, when you go look at a piece of real estate, you're looking at a financial statement. Or you're looking to invest in a company to buy its stocks, you're looking at a financial statement. what my rich dad did with me, he had me go out. He didn't care if it was an expensive piece of real estate or a cheap piece of real estate. He didn't care if it was a laundromat or a blue chip company. He had me constantly doing there, figuring out the financial statements of these different companies. The reason he chewed me out back in the 80s was I never got the relationship to my financial statement. In other words, I was out there analyzing somebody's company, but I didn't know what it meant to me, or a piece of real estate, or a stock, or a bond. I didn't know what it meant to me. He says, you don't get the relationship yet. Or managing my business is my corporation, and there's me personally. And I didn't understand how my business financial, like, you know, your company, Sarah, how your business's financial statement reflects on Sarah's personal financial statement. So the difference that I was saying to Diane, I didn't realize this, most people leave high school not even knowing how to balance a checkbook, or even college. If you can't balance a checkbook, you surely can't do a financial statement. And so if you want to be rich and cut down the risk and have money work for you, you really do need to think in financial statements. I was saying to Diane, because when I look at a piece of real estate, I see that financial statement. I see the financial statement of my real estate investment company. I see my personal financial statement, and I see the, how it relates to my other businesses, because they're all interrelated. So at any one time, I may be in my head holding about 7 to 8 different financial statements at any one time, seeing the relationship, how they all flow together here. So what cash flow does is it shows you, one, it's the basic, it's your financial statement. After you've mastered that, then you can go to 2. The way you go to 2 is you go out and you ask a real estate agent to show you apartment house or a single family unit, and you do the financials on that one, and you see how it dovetails into yours. Then you look at maybe a triplex, or you analyze a washer dryer small business, and you're trying to figure out the relationship of these different financials to you.
And the beginning, of course, is by playing cash flow. You've begun to see how a financial statement can work, and then once you determine your plan, then you know how to start adding elements to that and what the path you're going to take with that is.
I can't teach you that, but you can learn that. And that's all cash flow is designed to do, is have you, via repetition, sit there over and over again, learn it. Because that's all I ever did. I would sit out there. My rich dad would send me out. I would talk to a real estate agent. I'd get 2 or 3 deals. I'd have to come home, sit down, analyze them for him. Then he'd take me to a small business broker, and I would look at laundromats, nurseries, creative design houses, and all this. I would analyze different companies. But what started to happen, if you look at the financial statement from the board game Cash Flow, my mind automatically fills in the blanks. It automatically knows what's there, what's missing, and it becomes unconscious. It's like driving a car. It bypasses what I call read-only memory. I can look at a financial and almost automatically tell you what's missing. That's what I was saying. I can go into somebody's business, and by looking around, my subconscious or my DOS, my operating system internally, completely analyzes that company. In a split second, I can tell you what's missing, what it needs, why it's struggling, or what it can do to improve sales or do whatever it takes. But it all starts with a financial statement. The reason there's no risk is if I know what that piece of real estate is doing by the facts, not by how good the paint is or, you know, how nice it looks or how nice the tenants are and all this. If I know those numbers, I don't have to take any risk. If I know if the business is profitable, I don't have to take any risk. So when people say investing is risky, that's not my experience. See, investing is like driving a car. There's risk in driving a car, but you don't have to be risky. And so somebody driving in the car with their hands not on the steering wheel, that's risky. They're out of control. And so by having the financial statements puts you back in control. So anybody says investing is risky doesn't know what they're talking about, or they can't read a financial. So what happens to me, there is risk in investing, but I don't have to be out of control with it. I don't have to buy something that doesn't put money in my pocket. Diane and I were talking about how in Australia, they have a thing called negative gearing. We call it negative cash flow. What it is a scheme, as they call it, by the government to encourage you to buy property that loses money because you get a tax break for losing money. That's being out of control. I mean, no disrespect, but that makes no sense to me. Why not buy a piece of property that makes money and get the tax losses anyway? Because you can get both. So there's no risk because I'm making money and I'm getting my passive tax loss anyway. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. In fact, I see that in the U.S. today with people that are highly educated getting into deals that have negative cash flow on them. And then, as Robert said, in Australia, that's a huge deal. New Zealand also. People will purposely invest in properties because they've been told by someone else that it's a good deal to lose money.
Well, these were things that we were never taught. The trusting thing, it's like they were told this was a good
deal. That's exactly it. It's like that your banker says to your house is an asset. Well, he's not lying to you. He's not saying whose asset it is. It's his asset. And if you can't read a financial, you can't see it. People come up to me today, my house is an asset. My house is an asset. I got no debt on it. but you're still costing you money. The definition of an asset is something that puts money in your pocket. Liability is something that takes money from your pocket. And you can see it on the financial really clearly. It's really crystal clear.
It also brings up another point is the importance of team around you that helps support you in the plan you come up with. Because, Sarah, you're absolutely right. People will tell you things that from their perspective and what they've always been told is right. You know, these people aren't lying. That's what they actually believe is true. They're not trying to harm you, but that's their perspective. And so there's a lot of people to add to your team or that might already be there that you need to examine if they're supporting you in your plan.
Well, I see the big difference between you and myself is when you guys were talking about being able to look at a financial statement and it's a picture in your head. You've done that through practice. I'm just learning how to put that together one step at a time.
Right, and that's why cash flow was created for exactly for that reason was because when I went to business school, accounting was the single most boring subject I ever came across in my life. It was horrible. I mean, Diane loved it, but I hated it. Secondarily, investing is the most frightening. So you get boredom and fear combined. You have a bad combination right there. So cash flow is designed to make it entertaining, educational, and exciting at the same time, taking the risk out of it. And by repetition, you eventually becomes secondary to it. It's like driving a car. You can see it, read it, you understand it. But you still have to do the next step, which is go out there and actually look for a deal or look at a piece of real estate or look at a business and analyze it. Do that once a week. And pretty soon it becomes secondary. Simultaneously, you're talking to a financial planner for a plan to get you from where you are to where you want to go. You don't have to do this all at once because investing, as I said, is not that high-flying stuff. It's very simply acquiring an asset, either a piece of real estate, a mutual fund, a bond, or something. That's secure. See, they're called securities, not assets. The number one priority is to keep your money secure. If the price goes up, you make some money. Price goes down, you lose some money. But it's a secure place for your money. That's why they're called securities. So real estate's a piece of security. A bond is a piece of security. A stock is security. But it doesn't mean it's an asset. It's you who makes it the asset or the liability. I've seen people who buy a piece of real estate that was producing money, a real asset, and they mismanage it, and it becomes a liability. So you, as the investor, make something the asset or the liability.
It's the plan and how that all fits into the plan.
So if I could reiterate that investing to me is really quite mundane and boring. It's a matter of looking at the financial statements, figuring out how it fits. If it doesn't make me money, I don't buy it. If I can't get rich doing it, why do it? Why take the risk? It is boring. I think we're talking about with negative gearing, a gentleman named Michael Tellerico, and he's a real estate broker in Australia. He says, because somebody's accountant told him, you need to go buy some real estate that loses money for negative gearing. He'll be over there like this, working around the place, and these so-called high income, you know, high earned income individuals come in. They think they're going to be the big time investors and say, Michael, we want to lose some money. Can you show us a property that'll lose us some money? He says, help yourself. All day long, all you have around you are either real estate, mutual funds, bonds that lose money. Just help yourself. You don't have to ask me for help to lose money. But I have a lot of property that'll make you money. No. We're not interested in making money. We're here to lose money because we get a tax break from it. That is how bad the misinformation is out there. Yet in certain people's minds, and just because a person is an accountant doesn't mean they're an investor. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. People will always give advice from their own perspective.
It's not right or wrong, but you got to be careful. To me, it doesn't make sense. Why would I pay money to lose money?
And that's one reason it's important to always ask the question of advisors. Find out where they are personally, because that gives you a good idea of what their perspective is going to be and what the advice is then going to be.
So which brings up what you were talking about earlier, is people think, well, what if I lose money? Well, you're not supposed to lose money. You're not supposed to. You're supposed to make money. You're supposed to put some money into, let's say, a piece of real estate. It's secure. And then that $10,000 you have in there hopefully makes you $1,000 a year, 10% return. It's not supposed to lose you money. You're not supposed to lose money for tax advantages. That's called tax evasion almost. You do something to lose taxes. That doesn't make any sense from an investor's point of view. So what was the question you said about people think it takes a lot of money and all that other stuff?
The fear that it takes a lot of money to make something else. Part of your conversation, you were talking about stocks and investments. And I've always gone into wondering, why am I going to a stockbroker or someone like this, and I am paying them to give me advice? If their advice was so good, why are they still working 9 to 5?
Well, the term is broker because they're broke. I'm only kidding. You have to be, you know, it's like when you're asking somebody out for a date, you got to be very careful who you ask out. But the same thing as selecting a broker. The reality is most stockbrokers don't own any stock, and most real estate brokers don't own any real estate. What they are salespeople. There's nothing right or wrong with it because you got to have them. They're your eyes, ears, and windows to the market. So I like my brokers, but I still make my own decisions. And that is a very big difference there.
How can I invest if I don't have a lot of money? I look at you, Robert, and I've got my son, my work, everything, and I'm inundated with that, you know, psychologically. I look at you, and you've got a cat to support. Your financial status is different than mine.
That's true.
So how do I look at it, and how do I go forward with the differences that you have with your deals and the differences that I can make on my deals?
Well, that's why I started the book Cashflow Quadrant with my Kim and I being homeless, because we started with more than nothing. We started in debt. We had to begin with nothing. So I wanted to take away that idea that it takes money to make money, that you have to have a job to make money and all that. It really doesn't mean any of that. The point I was really trying to make here is that it takes education and it takes experience. It takes a plan. It doesn't take much money if you don't lose any money. So with my wife and I, Kim, we built our little business. And the reason we built our business from the B quadrant is because the tax laws are written in favor of those who are business owners. Tax laws are written against people who are employees and self-employed. All throughout the world, that's the fact. Ever since 1215, the signing of the Magna Carta, the rich have made the rules. So one of the things I learned really quickly was study tax law. Now, I don't study tax law. I hire people or I work with people like Diane Kennedy or other tax strategists, and I figure all this out. Now, if you don't want to do that, that's fine too. The most important thing I want to say about investing is really a formula. So you can start with $50 a month, put it in the S&P 500 index fund. In 20 years, you'll be fine. It is not what they say it is. It is very simply a product over time following a plan. For Kim and I, it was we bought one little house, we bought a second little house, third little house, four little houses. We got that formula from Monopoly. Four greenhouses. We 1031 tax-deferred exchange. All the capital gains were rolled into an apartment house. Repeat process. One house, two house, three house, four house. We're putting down only $2,000 or $3,000 a house. Now, the market was very bad at that time, which was very good for an investor. So that's the other part about it. When it's really bad, it's really good if you're a good investor. When it's really good also if you're an investor. So it doesn't really make any difference as long as you're following a plan. So after we had rolled up into several of these small apartment houses, we then 1031 those smaller apartment houses into bigger apartment houses. Now we have big apartment houses. But we started with no money. We just followed a very simple plan. And that's why before you begin investing, that's why we always say, start with a financial planner, but you don't just stay with one. Then you assemble your team around them. If you want to be very good at real estate, then a real estate broker, even though they may not invest in real estate, should be part of your team. If it's stock, then you'd have a stockbroker as part of your team. If it's mutual fund, again, it's a stockbroker. Would you say that's true?
Yes, and as we talk about this building team, it's important to think about the idea that we're playing to people's strengths. And as Robert just mentioned, having a real estate broker, well, they have a great skill. They have the ability to go find properties because they can look it up on the computer and find them. But if they haven't invested, they're not the person to ask, is this a good investment? Give them parameters. Play to their strengths. Let them help you make the best deal if that's what they know how to do. Some other ideas, I have just kind of a list of people you might want to have on your team. You want to have a financial planner, an accountant, an attorney, banker, stockbroker, real estate broker, insurance agent, trust officer, mortgage broker. And as you find people that fit in, that can sign on to the plan you have for you, you'll find you get stronger and stronger because cooperatively you're all doing what you do best.
And the best part about it, since it's cooperatively, you're getting information and you're getting the education that you never got in school. But you can't do it unless you're out there in the field doing it. That's the hard part. That's why I say there's between teaching and learning. You have to go out there and hit the street. Diane and I always talk about it. Diane is school smart and I'm street smart. The actuality in the real world is you really do need both. You need school smarts and street smarts. And if you don't have the school smarts, i.e., you know, like, let's say I went to school to become a dentist, I don't have any school smarts financially. And if I don't have the school smarts and I don't have the street smarts, then I'm going to struggle financially all my life. So that's why many times I have to make a distinction. It's like Diane is one of the top accountants in the whole U.S. and the world, from my opinion, because I've talked to a lot of them. So she comes with the school smarts, but she's also an investor. Is that true?
Yes.
And she also runs her own companies. So she also has street smarts, which means I don't have to be that smart. That's why I really enjoy it. And then I can be quite stupid, run around the place and do my own little deals and ask her, what do you think? And then we massage it. The thing is, I don't do it on my own. I think that's the biggest thing for me.
That's the biggest fear, too, is because I don't have the time to understand your roster of stocks, bonds, or real estate. You mentioned, I rolled it all over to a 1031. What's a 1031?
And you find that out as you go along. But the way I found it out, I was watching TV one night. I would tell this story. There was an infomercial came on. You, too, can become a millionaire in real estate. So I called up. It was a $39 introductory night. I signed up, went there, and I was stupid enough to sign up for the $385 course that lasted all weekend. I sat there. I talked to my really good friend at the time. This was back in the 70s. Yeah, early 72, 73. And he said, that course was a complete waste of time. He said, you'll never get rich doing that way. But I was stupid enough to believe the guy it was possible. And he said, go look for these kinds of pieces of real estate. And I went around, I knocked on all these realtors' doors in Hawaii. They said, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. That doesn't exist. Because they're brokers. They're not investors. And I kept asking and kept asking. Finally, I met this one little scrawny little guy in his little scrawny office. Yeah, I got some of those. I got a lot of them, in fact. And what they were $18,000 units in a place called Lahaina, Maui. And today, Lahaina, you can't touch. It is. But it was just sitting there. And I couldn't believe it was. The only reason it was there because I asked for it. So I flew over there. I bought three little dinky little deals, $18,000. 2 years later, I sold them for about $48,000 each. I made $30,000 a unit. And then I got such a huge tax bill. I went, what's this? And the guy says, don't you know what a 1031 is? I go, no, what is that? He says, you should have sold them tax deferred exchange and bought an apartment house. That's how I found out. I would never have found out otherwise. But it started with one step, and I actually believed this guy that it was possible. I ran around and I did it. And then I found the next step, but I made a mistake. And from that mistake, I found out the next step. And then I started meeting guys who were doing bigger and bigger deals. And pretty soon, I'm like a little kid tagging along with all these guys. You know, birds of a feather flock together. Pretty soon, I was getting education so fast. I was meeting accountants, attorneys who understood exactly what they were talking about. Because there's different kinds of accountants and attorneys. But that's how you learn it, is it does take action. I think the biggest investment a person makes is some time. So if you don't like real estate, fine. Then you better find something interested in.
And the important thing is that Robert, what he did 20 years ago is different than what he does today. I mean, he has changed his path as he's gone, as his needs and his goals have changed. And so for you, Sarah, you know, what you do now is not going to be, I'm sure, jumping into an apartment building that you're going to 1031 into another one. No, you're going to find something that fits for where you are and what your personal path is going
to
be.
And I say to most people, all you have to do is put $50 a month away for 30 years and you're set. Buy enough insurance so your insurance needs are covered. I had this friend of mine who was self-employed as a consultant. He ran his car off the road. He could no longer be a consultant. He lost his house. Family went bankrupt and all that. A little insurance would have covered the whole thing. So insurance is a very big part of it. That's what people say, well, I have a retirement plan or a 401k or superannuation. It's not enough. It really is a synergy of different kinds of products that give you the security. As Diane said earlier, you need security first, comfort second. They're two different plans. And if you want to be rich, that's a whole different plan. But most people are trying to get rich because they have no security and they have no comfort. But it starts with security and comfort. Hopefully you get to being rich.
And the real secret of all of this is you don't have to know all of this. Because as Robert was just talking about the insurance and the different kinds of insurance policies, he's got a great insurance agent that he works with who knows those things and knows what fits his plan.
Yeah, and knows my financial situation like this. I don't need certain things. They always try and sell you everything, but I'll call Diane. Diane, do I need that? She goes, no. I said, okay, don't need that. But as you get more experience, you get more educated. And the more educated you get, the better decisions you make. The better decisions you make, the more money you make. That's really where it comes from. The thing that I'm trying to say to people is that investing is really an automatic plan. It is manual. You know, like Van Tharp always says, a trading system is just that. It's not, you don't have to think. You just do this, you do that, you do this, you do that. There's no thinking to it. It isn't this high-flying stuff. And Van is into high-flying stuff. He is into hedge funds. But even hedge funds follow a plan. Different mutual funds follow different investment plans. That's why they say, well, all mutual funds are the same. That's not true. They all have different strategies. So when I read a mutual fund, I'm looking for what's the trading formula, what's the strategy, what's the plan of this fund. I'm more interested in the plan than who the fund manager is. Are they going to follow this plan? And so it really is quite a boring process. When I read a financial statement of an office building, I mean, it is boring. I sit there trying to figure out what is missing. How can I make more money? How do I leverage this? I bought a piece of real estate 2 years ago. It had an extra 3 acres attached to it. And that was priceless. I sold off the acreage. There was a young boy in Perth, Australia. He played cash flow once or twice, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He bought a house and sold off the extra land, just like I talked to him about. He made $100,000 tax-free from that extra piece of land. He kept the building. So it's not rocket science. It's just common sense. Would you say that's true?
Absolutely. And again, it doesn't have to depend all on you. It's having that team that everyone's playing to their strengths, as long as they're the right team and support your goals.
What you've taught me is to look for the asset in the financial statement, in the investment, into what I would enjoy doing. I have not gone down the road of real estate or anything like that, but I've looked at different things on the market and stocks and bonds, and I've gotten more of a freedom to be able to look at this as an investment, as something that I feel comfortable with. It's something that I understand. And like you said, it's just not a risk anymore.
You can read the financials. It's common sense. The other part that I sometimes go contradictory to people, say they have to enjoy things. I don't really enjoy my mutual fund, but the mutual fund delivers certain benefits to me. Like, I don't really enjoy riding a 737. But it gets me from here to St. Louis faster than walking. And so I think the biggest mistake that many of the S quadrant, you know, the employees in S, they think they have to do what they love and the money will follow. Yeah, that's a bunch of BS. I just want to figure out what's going to get me there the fastest. If walking gets me there fastest, I'll walk. If riding a car gets me there fast, I don't care. I'm not attached to the vehicle. So real estate provides me many benefits that a mutual fund doesn't. It doesn't mean one is better than the other. They have different benefits. One of the benefits of real estate is the bank will give me 90% financing on it. The government will give me a tax write-off for making money. I think that's quite wonderful. So I'll borrow like crazy to buy as much real estate as I can, because in my other companies, I'm making too much money. I need the write-off, but I don't want to write off with a loss. I want to write off from profit. So I make so much more money leveraging from real estate. Now, real estate is kind of a pain in the butt because there's management things with it. There's higher volatilities and risk internally in it. Mutual funds are pretty cut and dry. You buy them. They have certain advantages that I use. There's certain stocks that I buy, but it's all invested according to a plan. I don't really enjoy life insurance, but I buy it. I don't really get a thrill out of health insurance, but I buy it. I don't get a thrill out of fire insurance, but I buy it. And I think that's one of the big mistakes that people make, is that I must enjoy it. I don't enjoy anything except my free time. And so what these vehicles, the different products and different procedures and techniques for acquiring them, buys me the ultimate, which is freedom. That's all they are to me. I don't care about them that much. I really don't. I have not much affinity for them. I just do it because the government says put my money there and they'll give me a tax break for doing that. So good, I'll do it. That's about all it comes down to. Nothing to do with liking or not liking it. Not one is good and one is bad. They all have different strengths and different weaknesses.
The idea is, with the mutual fund, you have a plan for that investment first. It isn't just buying a mutual fund, but there's a plan and there's a purpose to each one of the investments you've got. And the other thing is, you're going all together with these different products in the same direction. This is just something I see with people when they first start investing. Frequently, it's not bad investments. They're just doing the shotgun approach, and there's no focus, and you sometimes have things that cross purposes. That's when diversification doesn't work.
Other thing about it is, with a financial planner, most of them are selling insurance and mutual funds. There's nothing right or wrong with that, but there's a saying in the industry that goes, you never ask an insurance agent if you'd buy insurance, because naturally they're going to say yes. So your responsibility, and this is where responsibility comes in, is really understand when you'd use real estate, when you'd use a mutual fund, when you'd use a bond, and when you would use stocks, whatever the case may be, or gold. What do we use gold for? That just takes a little reading. Then you have to go out there and you talk to all these different people, because they're all trying to sell you something. Like, I'm trying to sell something. Diane's selling something. You're selling something. You know, and if we didn't believe in our product, we probably wouldn't sell it. But your responsibility as an investor is know how they might work differently, because they're all going to tell you their product is the best. And that's not really true. The most important thing is, does it get you from point A to point B mechanically, automatically, with very low risk, with as much security as possible? And that's how you start the whole thing.